Joseph.
And I'm Nick.
And this is Fish Jelly. How are you?
Better now. It's been a long week though, huh?
Yeah.
My God.
Are we going to leave it at that?
We don't want to talk about my sty.
Do you want to explain why we didn't make videos for the past week?
Well, no, only a couple days. As sure. A Thursday.
Well, we had... what, like four videos dropped that were only audio?
Well, yeah, because it looked like, you know, it was really for your protection because it looked like you hit me.
Oh. Wow.
In fact, because...
I don't want to seem like I'm condoning domestic violence, so... some people need to get hit, so...
Oh boy.
I don't know that anyone would judge me too harshly, but...
For hitting me?
I mean, you know, people can see and hear you.
I have done nothing that deserves for me to be hit by you. I can understand some filmmakers maybe wanting to hit me, but not you. That's the first thing, because I went to an urgent care because it got really bad overnight, and I assumed it was a sty. But the doctor, for the 2 seconds he saw me, he's like, "What, did you get hit?"
Oh, he said that?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So I guess I just look rough and tumble.
But you feel right as rain.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just funny. I hate being organic. I hate being human.
Well.
Like, if I could be bionic, I would.
Okay, Christina.
Christina.
Aguilera. Remember?
God, that's your reference. That 2008 album?
When that album came out, we lived in a building that had a gym.
Oh my God, you played that album so much.
And I would just work out every day listening to that album, which is not very good.
I remember kind of anticipating that album because she asked a lot of collaborators, like Ladytron.
Yeah.
And somebody else, Peaches?
Peaches, yeah. Not Myself Tonight's a good track.
Yeah. Where she screams at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, what's that song where Sierra screams that I like?
The one where she talks about her booty being softer than a McDonald's hamburger bun.
I think, yeah, because there's just like this random scream in the middle of there, like, ah!
Anyway, moving on to kind of related. Sacha Baron Cohen and Isla Fisher announced that they filed for divorce last year.
After 22 years of playing tennis or however they said it.
Yeah, I just see her Instagram post, but it's a picture of the two of them in tennis outfits. After a long tennis match lasting over 20 years, we are finally putting our rackets down. In 2023, we jointly filed to end our marriage. Blah, blah, blah.
Is this sounds, in 2023 they filed? Okay, so they're announcing it now. Is this a way to eclipse the Rebel Wilson drama?
Well, I don't know how much traction that had, or maybe it was her being like, I don't want people asking me about you because we're not
right. Like, let me lay this right here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not super interested in these people or their divorce.
No, but you met her.
I did her hair once.
She was very concerned that you did not know who she was.
She was very concerned. I didn't know who she was.
And you told this dumb.
And I didn't know who she was. So when she asked me, I said, Amy Adams, and she was mad, and she had a big bag, like a beach bag, with a bunch of magazines,
yeah,
that she was featured in.
Well, because she had a small role in The Great Gatsby at that time, yeah.
So she pulled out the magazines and was pointing at, like, this is me, this is me. And then finally, she had a magazine with her husband on it, and she goes, this is my husband.
Oh, my God.
And of course, I apologized.
Why? But it's like, but bitch, it's not my job to know who you are. It's my job to do your hair.
Well, when I was told who was waiting... they said her name, like just her first name, and I'm sure they didn't know who she was either, so they probably didn't say it correctly. Not that it would have mattered to me.
La Isla Bonita.
But I'm sure they said like Isla, because I recall thinking her name was Isla until I heard someone say Isla. But, you know, I don't think anyone who was in the salon that day knew who she was.
I mean, I would have known who she was, but yeah, I find that behavior strange. Like, actually, shouldn't you enjoy this anonymity?
Which makes me think I did Nicole Murphy's hair once and no one knew who she was except me. Mm-hmm. And then, but like after, everyone thought she was a trans woman.
Oh.
Like, oh, wow, that And they didn't use such delicate language.
I'm sure.
But basically saying like how pretty she was.
Delicate language. You mean the correct language, but delicate. And Rosa McGowan too.
Rosa McGowan. Yep. Did her too. She was crazy. Moving on. So UK versus the World season 2. It has ended. There's a winner, but there's been some like chatter about it because people don't think the correct person won.
Oh, of course.
So in the top four for this most recent season, and for people who don't know, UK versus the World is kind of like an All Stars, but
different.
I guess because you know they had Canada versus the World. Apparently, getting because All Stars is RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars is US based, and apparently due to like work visas and such, mm-hmm. getting non-US queens to do All Stars was difficult. So then they started UK versus the World and Canada versus the World. So for Canada versus the World, the winner was a US queen, Raja O'Hara. And then for the first season of UK versus the World, the winner was Blue Hydrangea.
I don't even remember Raja O'Hara winning that.
You remember she was all purple.
She was all purple. But
I thought she was quite good.
She was, but I mean, it's just.
I also forgot she had won.
It's a testament to how oversaturated these things are becoming.
And then for this newest one, Tia Coffey won, who's the UK queen. Mm-hmm. But first, let's talk about the premise of the show, because the title would indicate that there's some sort of
teamwork.
Uh-huh. Like you would think, oh, they're going to have like half or like a cohort of UK queens versus queens from all over the world. And they do have, like they had four UK mm-hmm. queens.
They usually had the majority, the lion's share.
And then the other six were non-UK. But amongst the UK queens, part of the gameplay does not include the UK queens working together.
Because there's only one winner, so why would it?
So I hate the name of the show because it just doesn't make sense with how it all plays out.
Right.
But in the top four for this most recent season was Tia Coffey from the UK, Hannah Conda from Australia,
La Grande Dame
from France, and Marina Summers from the Philippines.
And they had a lip sync dance off to determine the winner.
Exactly. And there was only one clear lip sync assassin this season, and it was Marina Summers.
And she was the first to...
By far and wide.
Like, oh, wait. So the first round was she beat... No, Hannah Conda beat her.
Hannah Conda. Right. Okay. But so the fans are saying Marina should have won. And then I was listening to Race Chasers with Alaska and Willem. And you know, Willem likes to tell everybody's business. Uh-huh. So Willem was saying that he, of course, knows some of the queens who were on the show. And they told him that during the lip sync between, because there were, it was like a lip sync Lollapalooza to determine the winner. And mm-hmm. the first two to go up were Marina Summers and Hannah Conda. Mm-hmm. So Willem was saying that the people who were on set that day, that Marina like wiped the floor with Hannah. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the actual show and the way it was edited, we really only see Hannah dancing mm-hmm. and Michelle Visage for some reason, like reacting. Uh-huh. They really cut Marina because Willem's saying that she was doing all kinds of,
as she's wont
like,
to do.
Like yep. they had to really like not show her.
Okay.
So that they could say she didn't win. So, of course, Hannah Conda won that lip sync. So the first person to get knocked out of consideration was Marina Summers, which is crazy.
Well, because she would have won all the lip syncs, probably.
So that's my problem with...
Because, wait, who won again? Tia? Yeah, Coffey. Like, she probably... Like, they probably wanted to give it to Tia.
Well, that's what Willem is saying, yeah. that they wanted to give it to Tia, so they had to knock out Marina. And the only way to do that was to basically not show her lip sync and then just have RuPaul announce Hannah's the winner.
But Marina picked Hannah.
Strangely.
So
yeah, because I mean, Hannah, I would say of the four, was the second best performer.
Yeah, like Marina should have picked the
girl. And based off the edit, I thought that Hannah did a better job.
Based off the edit, yeah.
But
Willem is becoming a regular little Luella O'Parsons, like obsessed with these people that you also want to distance yourself from.
But I don't, I don't think that Tia Coffey doesn't deserve to win. I thought she really excelled. Her snatch game was so funny. And then they had a comedy challenge where they had to do like a wedding toast. And Tia Coffey's was, I mean, she was so good. Also, of the four, because I always think the best winners are the ones who you could give a microphone to and they could like host a show for an hour. Mm-hmm. And of the four, I could only see Tia Coffey or Hannah Conda doing that.
Yeah.
But Marina was really deficient in the comedy area.
For sure.
So it's like, well, like being a good dancer is really fun to watch. But like.
Yeah, but do you want Jennifer Lopez to host your shows? No.
Right.
I don't want her talking.
And then LeGrand Dame was like, her looks were out of this world. But I think she had a hard time.
I think people forget that RuPaul always clearly tells us that his is the final decision to make. Mm-hmm. It is his show. It is his name on all the bullshit. So the fans can say all whatever the fuck they want to say. But really, it comes down to one person, probably some others that are behind the scenes. But he's told us up front, it's his show. It's his shit. So,
yeah.
Bleh.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's his decision. It's what they tell us. So, I mean, I don't really... But that being said, I do think Tia Coffey... You know, the other thing is Tia Coffey has... From her first season to now, has grown so much. I was so impressed with her. So, I mean, I think she deserved it.
I agree.
Okay, earlier we were talking about Planet of the Apes, because there's a new one coming out, and then saying how they have like so many with like different titles. Mm-hmm. But then it made me think, because I had seen a video on TikTok of some guy talking about the Fast and Furious franchise and the naming of each installment.
Well, now we're just down to numbers.
Well, so then I thought, let me look at the names. And so I'm looking at...
Planet of the Apes?
No, for Fast and Furious. And the nomenclature, like the logic behind it, there is no logic.
Well, no, because it was never meant to be. The Tokyo Drift is what, the third one?
So there are 11 films in the franchise, and I'm just going to go through each one. The Fast and the Furious, 2001. Too Fast, Too Furious, which two is the number two. Mm-hmm. Too Fast, Too Furious, 2003. The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, that's the 2006 film. Mm-hmm. Fast and Furious with the ampersand. So for previous ones, it was the word and. Now it's the ampersand. That was the 2009
film. Great sense, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then we have Fast 5, but 5 is the word, not the number. That's the 2011 film. Then we have Fast and Furious 6, ampersand, and the number 6, not the word 6.
That's the one with the endless the runway sequence at the end.
The 12-minute takeoff or landing. That was the 2013 film. Then we have Furious 7, number 7.
That's when we start being like, we got to get some actual Hollywood stars, I remember, because I think that's when you get Kurt Russell and Charlize. Is she in that one? That's when they start trying to, people like Tyrese start getting hit on the back burner.
That was the 2015 film. Then we have The Fate of the Furious, which is the 2017 film.
It's a family.
And that one has a title that would indicate maybe this would be the last of it.
Hopefully, but it's not. It made too much money. Mm-hmm.
Then in 2019, we get this offshoot called Fast and Furious Presents.
Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah, we saw that.
Which I kind of enjoyed. I mean, that movie is beyond ridiculous.
Yep.
2021, we get F9. The letter F, the number 9. But then... For the 2013 film, the most recent one, it's called Fast X, and X being the Roman numeral for 10.
Because people don't know the Roman numeral for 9.
For 9?
But
then, like, why didn't they call Fast 5 like Fast V? I don't know. So the person who made the TikTok was saying how ridiculous it is. I kind of find it funny. Because, I mean, I think this franchise is very aware of its audience and how they'll just buy any dumb thing. So I kind of feel like the titles make sense for being so random.
It's really different than, I know there's a plan for Marvel's rollout, but it's like, not really. They've stacked and stacked and remade. Like, it doesn't, none of it really adds up, because it's not a cohesive plan thing. It's about making money.
Speaking of Kurt Russell, we attended a screening for WrestleMania. WrestleMania was a weekend the Alamo Drafthouse in DTLA was hosting, showing Kurt Russell films.
I believe
select films.
I believe several Alamo Drafthouses were.
Oh, were? Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we elected to go to Breakdown.
Breakdown.
We're going to record a podcast that we'll post on YouTube.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
We're not.
I don't want to do video.
I thought it was for Patreon.
No, it'll be for YouTube.
You don't want to do video?
No, not today.
Why not?
It's so much easier to just record audio. I have a lot of things to do.
Okay.
So there's that. You tried Coca-Cola has a new flavor for the first time in a long time. Like a flavor that's going to be like one of their offerings.
Okay.
The spiced.
Oh, the melange.
What did you think of that?
It was fine. Yeah. I don't know. I mean.
Would you get it again?
If it's there and on sale, I don't really drink soda and I will only drink Coke Zero. You know, I was just in Puerto Rico and a lot of those little places, they have Diet Coke, which I will not drink, but I will drink Coke Zero.
You don't like Diet Coke?
No, it does not taste good to me.
Okay.
I don't like it. Coke Zero tastes like the real thing. And I don't, but the thing is, I don't really love the real thing anyway. It's just kind of like something different to drink besides water and coffee, which is usually what I do all day long every day.
No, that's why you.
Oh, go ahead. Disparage me.
Maybe you should just stick to water.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the restaurant section. Last night, after we saw Breakdown, we went to Joey DTLA, which you've been to before.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention it because the Google description of the restaurant, which I don't know if it's from the restaurant's website, but it says relaxed contemporary dining spot.
I don't know that I call it relaxed.
No, but it's like in the heart of downtown on the corner. And it's very open, so you hear all the commotion.
All the fucking traffic.
All the traffic. And then the music inside is loud, and it's like urban, modern, upbeat music.
I mean, I did like some of the music they were playing.
Yeah, but I don't dislike the music, but it's loud. Uh-huh. But it's just to call it relaxed, it's the opposite of.
It's not relaxed. We were also kind of on the patio, and it was kind of chillé. And then we stayed a long time. And then this huge group moved into it next to us and decided that they really needed to vape right now, which didn't bother. It's not, vaping doesn't smell bad to me. It's just like, this is really, kind of inconsiderate, isn't it?
You know, I don't like cigarette smoking. Like cigarettes are bad, period. Right. I mean, beyond perhaps enjoying a cigarette every now and then, but
yes, they're not good for you.
Mm-hmm. But you know, they smell gross, they're not good for you, blah blah blah. But I think seeing people vape is more annoying to me. Like, yes. I would rather see someone smoke a cigarette.
That's the old school way, you know.
Which I was listening to Theo Vaughn I think it was yesterday, and he was talking about vaping. Someone asked him about vaping. And he's like, when I was a kid, you had to smoke a cigarette like a man. You had to hold that little.
Well, you know, cultural coding of smoking, say in cinema, was it used to be a sign of masculinity, of strength, and then it came to take on the personification of anxiety and paranoia and weakness and addiction, right? Like there was a shift in how we interpreted, like, say what a character was doing on screen, smoking a cigarette. And if you think about, where does vaping stand into that? Because it doesn't really exemplify strength or stability. And again, I think in comparison to smoking now on screen, I've seen a resurgence of people smoking as a way that is kind of vintage, a throwback, old school, cool.
I think smoke or vaping bothers me because
it never ends.
You know, smoking, we obviously learned, was bad. And then I think for a long period of time, like in the 90s, secondhand smoke was like a big conversation, right?
Yeah. And so was AIDS.
So, you know, people's aversion to smoking went beyond just like your personal health. It was like, well, if you smoke, that's going to affect me, right? Yes. So then it was more about like being considerate. And then that's when we started seeing it become less tolerated or fashionable to smoke. But with vaping, I feel like people who vape are kind of like, especially in public places, it's like they think they're getting one over on you. Like, look, I can still smoke and you can't do anything about it. And it's like, okay, fine. It doesn't smell as bad and it doesn't linger the way cigarettes do, but I don't think they're healthy for you.
No.
And also you look dumb. Like the, like billowing all this white smoke, well, it's that like smells like watermelon. And it's like, okay,
a dragon's here. Like, my God. Yeah. Like, why do you, I don't know that to me.
Also to me, smoking, you know, isn't it sometimes it can look chic, but mm-hmm. I think that people, when I see people smoking now, it's like, you don't look, it's not cute. To me, it's like, oh, some handsome man in a leather jacket, like in a bar somewhere 50 years, you know, like the image of it is different.
The Brando picture.
But now it's like some old sweaty hunchback man, like in the corner who, you know, smells disgusting. And then they're smoking, or like, it's just such an unattractive thing to see people do. Mm-hmm. And then with vaping, it, you know, it's always some clown looking dude, like. They look even more clownish, because at least people who smoke cigarettes look ragged. Like, oh, well, makes sense you're smoking, I guess. But with vaping, it's just like, oh, you look like, I don't know. I'm going to get in trouble. But
no,
I think vaping is whack.
I think the thing is, like with a cigarette, it ends. Like, unless you're a chain smoker, then that's another problem. But like, you toss it, it's gone. With the vape, it's just like, you can just suck on that thing and keep plugging in little canisters or whatever.
Also, I've had like coworkers who vape, and then like they would be like, come outside, and then I'll like try the vape, and I just think like, well, this, I mean, it tastes fine, like it tastes good sometimes, but then I just think like, you have like a system, you have to buy this thing and put batteries in it and buy the cartridges, and then I don't know, like it didn't feel the same as a cigarette to me.
It doesn't feel the same.
No. And the people who I know who do vape, it's like they're doing it all the time.
Yes. And because also there's kind of that gray area. It's like, can you do that in here? Okay.
It feels more incessant than if you just handed me a cigarette.
Right. And there's just like another like contraption to carry around. It's like, I don't want to carry around that or an oxygen tank. So,
but both are bad. Don't do it. Joey DTLA is not relaxed. I also wanted to mention our server was a really sweet young lady who was super petite.
Yes.
And when I ordered my food, she goes, oh, are you hungry? And I said, yes. She goes, that's a really big portion. I'm like, oh. She's like, yeah, it's a huge bowl with all this stuff in it. It was like a Mediterranean themed like rice bowl.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, I mean, I'll get it, you know.
Well, we're like, I'm 2 times bigger than you, girl. But.
Well, then I go, I don't know if I trust you because I'm literally twice your size. Because she's like, well, I weigh 115 pounds. And I'm like, I'm literally twice girl. Your size. I don't. And then I told her, I'm like a cow. I have 2 stomachs. Like, I don't know if.
Wait, don't they have 4?
Do they have 4?
I thought they had 4.
Oh.
But they're not real stomachs.
But either way, I thought she was cute. And then when they bring out that bowl, chow.
I think
a Chipotle burrito bowl has more food in it than what they gave
you. You can get more in your bowl than what that was serving. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not, I would actually, it was kind of a small portion for $30. I was not, also that food was overpriced, but we had a lovely dinner with nice company. So moving on.
Cows actually only have 1 stomach, but it's 4 different compartments.
Oh,
I don't want to, sorry. I didn't want to be, fake news. Fake news.
So it's a multi-family situation.
It's like a ventricles and atriums. Is that like your heart?
Oh, you have a lot of films here that were released we didn't cover. Musica.
Yes, I have actually seen this film. I think it played at South by Southwest. Directorial debut of Rudy Mancuso. It is okay. It is this kid that seems like he probably needs some kind of anxiety medication, that is obsessed with music, and has a romance with a girl. But it's one of those movies where everywhere he sees is like the rhythm of life, and in his mind there's this musical being acted out all around him that no one else can see, which to me gets a little taxing. It's fine. The director is the lead star. It kind of reminded me of the musical version of something like Shit House recently.
Oh.
So it's fine. It's now available on Amazon Prime.
Chicken for Linda.
The best thing about this was the title. I saw this.
Does Linda get chicken?
Linda gets some chicken.
Oh, good.
So thank God for that. This is an animated film. I think I saw it at the Acid section at Cannes last May, directed by Sebastian Laudenbach and Chiara Malta. It's about a loving mother, Paulette, who feels guilty after unfairly punishing her daughter, Linda, and would do anything to make it up to her. She sets off to make a chicken with peppers, even though she doesn't know how to cook.
That sounds crazy.
It's a comedy of errors involving this chicken dish.
Girls State.
This is about a bunch of girls. It's a documentary getting together to reenact like Supreme Court case shit. It's on Apple TV, directed by Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss. It seemed like one of those things I should watch. I just didn't. I was just like, yeah.
The Greatest Hits.
This looked like something I would not ever be interested in. Starring Lucy Boynton. And again, it's about how music has the ability to transport us. And it's a love story. It's directed by Ned Benson. It's been a decade since we've seen anything from Ned, who did The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, which does have Isabel Huppert in it, and I've seen. But that was that movie about a divorce where there's two distinct films, him and hers. Like, it's the same film told from each of their perspectives, James McAvoy and Jessica Chastain. Mm-hmm. And then so I saw him and hers at Toronto, and then at Cannes the next year, he did a combined version, The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, them. And I still have yet to watch that because I thought watching the other two back-to-back was fucking overload. But but yeah, so there are three versions of that one film, which I've seen two of. But he has a new film. We got the, because it's a 20th Century Studios. I don't think anybody can forward you the thing because I was like, I don't want to drive to see this.
Go on. Housekeeping for Beginners.
I would still think this is something you'd be interested in seeing. We had a screener forever and we just didn't get around to it. But I saw it out. This was out of Venice Horizons sidebar. I saw it last fall. It's the third film by Goran Stolevski, the Macedonian, whose first film you liked a lot. I did too. You Won't Be Alone.
Hmm.
About the witch.
Yeah.
And then I really liked his second film, Of an Age, which is semi-autobiographical. This film is interesting. You saw the preview for it about the kind of queer family holding it together.
Yes.
Yeah. And it feels a lot. If I was blind to this person and watched his three films, I would assume this was his first.
Oh.
So maybe this was something he'd been wanting to tell. Because this seemed a lot more rough around the edges than his past two, but it's still worth a watch.
Kim's Video.
This is a documentary. Somebody sent me something about this too. I haven't watched it yet, but it's directed by David Redman and Ashley Sabin. And it's a documentary apparently that's playing with forms and tropes of cinema about someone's quest to find a legendary lost video collection of 55,000 movies in Sicily.
Oh, Parachute.
It's about a woman that has a food addiction issue, but I've only included it in talking about it because Brittany Snow directed it, an actor. She's been in tons of stuff for years, but I think you might remember her as the blonde from Ty West's Ex, which I don't believe she makes it out of alive of. But yeah.
Scoop.
This is something I still would really like to watch again, even though it got middling reviews. But Philip Martin directs, who directed a couple of the Prime Suspect items with Helen Mirren, starring Gillian Anderson, about the Prince Andrew interview about Jepstein.
Mm. Lastly, Yannick.
I'll probably watch this week. It premiered on Mubi on Friday. It's another new title. I think this premiered out of Locarno, directed by Quentin Dupieux, who you've seen a couple of Dupieux films.
Whenever I think of Dupieux, I think of the movie Kingdom Come and Dupieux's funeral home.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Quentin Dupieux. We reviewed his last couple films, Mandibules and Smoking Makes You Cough.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Deerskin, I think we reviewed too. He's works a lot. But it was just announced that his latest feature with Léa Seydoux is opening the Cannes Film Festival this year. Ooh. Out of competition.
Well, let's take a break.
CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF protect skin against damaging UV rays and continuously deliver 3 essential ceramides to help restore skin's protective barrier so it can lock in moisture. Non-greasy, fragrance-free, and won't clog pores? With CeraVe, skin feels hydrated and looks healthy all day. CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF from the number one dermatologist recommended facial moisturizer brand.
Projects of interest, which, Night of the Hunter,
which was on my list last week. We skipped over them.
Okay.
Yes. Scott Derrickson, who's not a filmmaker I particularly love. His first, he did Doctor Strange, which is blah. I didn't like The Black Phone and Sinister, the first one, at least half of that's a good movie. And he's about to have a new film with Sigourney, which I hear she's underutilized in already, called The Gorge. But he's remaking the classic Robert Mitchum, Lillian Gish, Shelley Winters film directed by Charles Laughton, Night of the Hunter. And I don't know that we need that because the first one's brilliant. But I have read that the novel it's based on is much darker. So I'm assuming we would get the darker bits.
Separate rooms.
Guadagnino's already, you know, he's got Challengers, which has been delayed, about to be released this month, and Queer, an adaptation of the William S. Burroughs memoir, which is really worth reading if you haven't, which Steve Buscemi was trying to make for years and years and years. Apparently that's tipped to play at Cannes. We'll find out for sure next week. He's already got a new project announced called Separate Rooms with Josh O'Connor, who's in Challengers, who's also pretty good in the new Alicia Rohrwacher film. And Léa Seydoux this week has announced that she will be in it as well. So that's exciting to me.
Day drinker.
Mark Webb, of all people, is about to bring Johnny Depp back into American film, because, you know, he was in Jean Dubarry last year, with Sydney Sweeney in a film called Day Drinker.
The Monkey.
Osgood Perkins, who I'm glad he's got, I think this is already done filming. Long Legs is coming out shortly, and he has adapted a Stephen King short story. I think it's the longest short story in the collection, The Skeleton Crew, if I remember correctly. And Theo James, is that the guy's name? He's in it. But yeah, that should be interesting.
Nuclear War.
Denis Villeneuve is already making plans beyond Dune, even though Dune Messiah still needs to film. It's based on a nonfiction book called Nuclear War. So guess what that's about? I think the book's called Nuclear War, a Scenario. So guess what that'll be about? But apparently his feature after Dune is all done.
There's an untitled project from Ryan Coogler.
Yes, I was reading. This sounds very interesting to me, but Michael B. Jordan, one, is playing twins. Two, it's a period piece in the Jim Crow era Deep South, which has supernatural vampiric elements and Southern voodoo tradition things. But Jack O'Connell's playing the villain, and Delroy Lindo, who I also quite like, is just been announced as part of the cast. So that should be, I'm excited to see Coogler, whose first film, if you haven't seen Fruitvale Station, which won Sundance, which is a great little drama. I mean, it's very depressing. I'm excited to see him step out of the comic book universe, which Black Panther and the sequel are of the better versions of these kinds of films. But I'm interested to see what he can go back to outside of those kind of things.
Lastly, sentimental value.
Norway's Joachim Trier, after his, he's had several breakouts, but to date, The Worst Person in the World has gotten, you know, the most attention for him, and an Oscar nod for script. But he's starting to collect financing for his latest film, Sentimental Value.
Last week on our Patreon, we reviewed Billy Elliot, The little boy who wants to dance ballet.
Ballet.
And Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Yes.
Starring Nicholas No H. Cage. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there is an entry in the obituary section.
Yeah.
Christopher Durang died.
Yes, he was 75.
You seem sad about this.
I was. Well, he was Sigourney's best friend. He's the one that championed her when they were at Stanford. Where did they meet? Yale School of Drama, where Meryl was. He wrote a bunch of early plays with her in mind, including Titanic, which she still references a lot, about where she plays a character who kept a hedgehog in her vagina. She did, and you know, I still have a poster. I need to get it properly framed for Sex and Longing, what she did in 1996. And somebody told a funny story. I only recently learned about her going to Tiffany's to get cast gifts for everybody. And she wanted some vulgar words from the play, which something like fuck me, fuck me, fuck me on these trinkets she wanted for the cast. And Tiffany's refused to engrave it. And she like apparently had a shit fit about like, but I'm buying your bullshit. So he's probably best known as a writer for Beyond Therapy, because Robert Altman adapted that, which I think we have a Blu-ray review for that film, which is just okay, where Julie Haggerty took over Sigourney's role. But you got a whole slew of notables and Jeff Goldblum, Glenda Jackson. Sister Mary Ignatius explains it all for you, I think, at a Diane Keaton TV version. But yeah, I used to go to the public library. I remember checking his plays out, and I would read them out loud to my sister, who was 6 years younger, which was even more inappropriate because of my Sigourney craze. But yeah, he had aphasia, so I think it was probably a while in coming. And you and I, your relationship to this person is we took a red-eye flight to New York to see Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike at the tail end of 2013 before that play moved to Broadway.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you discovered Billy Magnuson, even though that was a strenuous trip for you.
Yeah. But now we're friends. So
oh, yeah, yeah.
I guess it's fine.
Friends in your head movie. And I think that was a lovely play. And I think sometime this month it was announced, you know, because I still search for news bits on her every day. The original cast was going to get together for a reading somewhere. Yeah.
Well, goodbye to this man.
Yeah.
He was a homosexual.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's take another break.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This week's secret film was your choice, and you chose the 1991 American coming-of-age black comedy, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Well, there's a footnote with that choice.
Oh,
I was pressured to choose
this. I didn't ask
this.
You to choose this. You chose it on your own accord.
You made it clear that this is what I should choose.
No. I said it would make sense to watch this movie since we're going to be reviewing the new BET Plus version of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yes. It was made clear to me that this should be the...
No.
It was made clear to me that Hillary would be the Democratic selection, no matter how much people love Bernie. It was made clear to me it would be Hillary.
You know, you present yourself as someone who's not going to be told what to do, and...
No, I'm just letting you know the favors happen, but...
Oh, this is a favor to me? Well, that's too bad. I do want to mention before we get into it, we have a friend who loves this movie.
We do?
Mm-hmm. Who's Javier. Hi, Javier.
He does?
I had no clue, but you know, I posted on our Instagram stories a short video from the movie, and he knew it and quoted the movie.
Oh my God. Well, I remember this from being a kid.
So what's your relationship to this movie?
I mean, it was on when we got cable, it was on TNT or some shit like that all the time. But I haven't really thought of this movie in a long time, but it's directed by Stephen Herrick, which he had a really interesting filmography in the 80s and 90s, because he did 101 Dalmatians, Mr. Holland's Opus, ooh, Critters, ooh, The Mighty Ducks, Bill and Ted, his debut was Critters, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, The Three Musketeers, Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg. I believe Jennifer Aniston's in that. But so in the 80s and 90s, had a really weird career. And this is also kind of not really fitting with some of those either.
I had never seen this movie. I had heard the title before. It didn't speak to me. And I don't know why, because I was a huge Married with Children fan. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know that I liked Bud, and I always thought Ed O'Neill was handsome. So I don't think Christina Applegate appealed to me. So her but, being
Bud and his rap career.
Yeah, David Faustino.
Anybody listening, if you haven't experienced,
if you go on Google and look up David Faustino rapping, he had an album. But yeah, I like those two and the lesbians, the neighbor, the lesbian, her husband.
Yes.
Do you remember his name? This might be worth me.
You know, the film that that came out actually the same year that I loved much, that I think is much better and has some similar vibes, is Joan Micklyn Silver's Big Girls Don't Cry, They Get Even.
Oh.
If you haven't seen that. I know David Strathairn is in it. I forget who the teenage girl is, though.
The actor I was thinking of is Ted McGinley.
Okay.
Who people would recognize if they saw... Because yes. He was in, I want to say he was, oh, he was in Happy Days. That's how I also remember him. And The Love Boat, Dynasty, Revenge of the Nerds. Oh, and that ABC show Hope and Faith. He was on that. Anyway, what is Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead about? Five siblings are left alone all summer when their mom leaves town and the evil babysitter bites the dust. Man, based off of the title and the premise, I thought this would be something very different. I fell asleep halfway through. I couldn't stand the first half of this movie.
Well, but these kids, they live in this Grey Gardens house type house environment, and they ain't shit.
But I went to bed, woke up this morning, and finished it, the second half. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed the second half more. Overall, I don't think it's a good movie, but
it sounds like it
has some charm.
It has some charm, but it sounds like it was a concept that kind of changed a lot somewhere along the way.
I would believe that.
But then I was also reading, and I was trying to find some other information besides IMDb trivia about the middle brother, Christopher, is it Pettiet?
Zach,
who apparently the producers had to cut down his role because of his drug problem. And he was... You're really young, like 13 here.
Well, he looks like he's 10 or 11, but he's supposed to be a teenager. Mm-hmm. And then finding out what you just said, if it's true, because he seems kind of out of it in the movie too.
Well, even it seems like some scenes, because he has a whole backstory that
with this little girlfriend,
and it feels really random because they probably did cut down.
Yeah, so that would make sense.
Because he died at the age of. He just turned 24 and had a drug overdose. So
let me try to get through this story. So there's a family.
Mm-hmm.
The mom.
With a lovely lady.
The mom's name. What is the mom's name?
Oh, she says that she is 37, I think.
And Conchetta Tomei.
Yes. And I'm like, I'd immediately had to look that up. I'm like, this woman
she
is not
looks,
37.
She doesn't. Well, you know, it's bad when someone says their age and you're like, I know you fucking lying.
Lying to these children, to their faces. She was like 46.
So Conchetta is a single mom and she has this big house and these five kids who range in age from 17 to like seven.
Mm-hmm.
And one day she tells her kids like, oh, my boyfriend is taking me on a trip to Australia
for two months.
Months. 8 weeks. 56 days. She's going to Australia. And she's like, well, you guys are going to stay here for the summer. And I'm getting you a babysitter. And of course, the kids are upset, disappointed.
She doesn't tell the kids about the babysitter until she's on the way to the airport.
And doesn't know this lady. She finds this old, decrepit lady who... When she shows up, the mom is like, are you sure you can handle this?
Mm-hmm.
And the lady's like, yeah, I've spent my entire life raising kids.
And I have no family.
And I have no family. So like, this is great. And the mom is like, all right. Also, side note, the mom is dressed like an executive assistant with an attaché and everything.
Uh-huh.
Why is she dressed like that to go to the airport?
To fly the 16 hours to
Australia?
To fly
for 24 hours to go to Australia.
Girl, that's not comfortable.
But she leaves and... The old lady switches up real quick.
Immediately.
She becomes Louis Gossett Jr. from An Officer and a Gentleman.
Oh my God.
And then immediately dies.
I was going to say Major Payne. But...
Or Major Payne. But she immediately dies. Like within the first like 3 minutes of her showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even a fun death. She just dies like sitting on the Lazy Susan.
The Lazy Susan. Isn't that the, that's a kitchen involved thing, isn't it?
I thought a lazy, isn't, wait.
That's the spinning, the thing that spins around, I thought.
You're right. What do you call the chair that you sit in, like the Barco lounger? Don't those have a name?
Just a lounge chair?
Oh my God. I don't know that I'll be able to, I'm not going to recover from this if I don't figure
I'm
out.
I'm not going to recover called. From this, okay?
I don't know how I'm going to go on until I find out. So I was wrong. A Lazy Susan is a kitchen thing.
Yeah, because we had one of those growing up. And a butcher block.
But a Barco lounger has another name. Anyway, she's sitting in like a big chair and just dies. Yep. It's so uneventful. So the kids are like, well, we're just going to take her to the mortuary. They stuff her ass in a suitcase and take her down to the mortuary. But these dumb kids... Because the mom had left the babysitter a bunch of money for the 2 months. Mm-hmm. But the babysitter had taken the money and put it on her person. So when these kids dropped off the babysitter at the mortuary, they also dropped off that money.
Which I don't believe, because it shows the little druggy kid is stealing from the mother. She catches him and it seems like it's a regular occurrence because she's like, just ask for money, stop taking it. So I don't believe that this little miscreant would not have checked this old lady's body.
Oh, well.
Right?
Perhaps. But so now they've, you know, disposed of this old woman's body and they're thinking, and they have her car and she drives this cool classic car. Mm-hmm. So now they think that the summer is going to be theirs to enjoy when they realize they have no money. So Christina Applegate is the oldest daughter, who they call Swell, mm-hmm. but her name is Sue Ellen. She's, and then the second oldest is her brother,
Coogan.
That's his name? Keith.
Keith Coogan.
Kenny.
Yeah, he's Jackie Coogan's grandson.
Kenneth. That's his character name, Kenny. Mm. Yes. So the two of them are like, what are we going to do? And she's like, well, let's flip, like heads or tails. If I lose, I'll get a job. And if you lose, she says he has to do something weird, like sell ass on the corner. I mean, it's something that's not a job. Uh-huh. So that was weird. But she loses, so she's like, well, I guess I have to get a job. She gets a job at like a burger place, which is important, but she doesn't even last the day. So then she goes to this.
But she importantly meets Josh Charles there.
Yeah, we can get to that. So she finds an ad for receptionist at like an apparel company. And when she gets there, the woman in charge takes a liking to her, primarily because her resume is super impressive. She says she's like graduated from Vassar and like
Comme de Garçon. I spied on there. Like,
and then they're commiserating over the fact that they both dislike the receptionist who applied for the executive administrative position. Uh-huh. So the boss lady, played by Joanna Cassidy, who I thought was so lovely.
I love Joanna Cassidy.
She's like, well, girl, your resume is so impressive. I'm really digging your vibe and we both can't stand this bitch. So I'm going to give you the job.
Yeah, she just. Yep, lickety split.
And she's like, here you go. Your salary is like $37,500. You get pension, medical plan, all that.
Which $37,500 for 1990?
I mean, that was like close to six figures, I bet.
That's a pretty good wage.
So that's a pretty penny.
Yeah. Even though they're in LA, but yeah.
Although her duties would indicate that she should be making that much because she's doing a lot. Because Joanna Cassidy's telling her, you're in charge of like all this cross-functional shit and organizing. Ooh. Like...
Get the QED report.
We have to get back to the QED report. But anyway, the bulk of the movie is Christina Applegate trying to masquerade as an adult in this executive administrative position.
Mm-hmm. Smoking cigarettes.
And we need to talk about the cigarettes. But this episode should be called Cigarettes. But of course, there has to be an antagonist. And the current receptionist, her name is Carolyn.
Played by Jane Brooke, who it was a blast from the past. I'm like, God, I remember her face. She was a prominent character in Chicago Hope, which my mother watched religiously because she loved Mandy Patinkin.
So Jane Brooke, Carolyn, the receptionist, she's not a nice lady and she's mad because she wanted the job that Christina Applegate got. Mm-hmm. So for the bulk of the movie, Carolyn's trying to find a way to like sabotage Christina Applegate. Mm-hmm. But she tries like three times and each time her boss, Joanna Cassidy, flips it. Mm-hmm. Like when it's found out that someone else, which we'll get to, is doing Christina Applegate's work for her, Joanna Cassidy's like, oh, wow, you are really like, I knew I could count on you. Like, you're so great at delegating. I was wondering how you were going to get all this done. She calls her a paragon. She even tells the receptionist, like, you know, if you ever want to be executive material, you need to look at Sue Ellen over here. So Joanna Cassidy is so cute in this role. She's really positive, like encouraging, and nothing's going to.
Well, and she believes what Sue Ellen tells her because.
Well, she believes in Sue Ellen because Sue Ellen is delivering.
Well, yeah, but they're because they have a male coworker who's some male executive, Gus, played by John Getz, who is supposedly romancing Joanna Cassidy, but kind of.
He's a philanderer.
A philanderer and kind of, you know, doesn't want to get off the pot of. He won't commit to her and he starts flirting with Christina Applegate. And when she reveals that this is happening, Joanna Cassidy immediately believes her.
Yeah.
And it's even even when we find out Sue Ellen has lied about some important things, he still says, you still believe this little girl. And she says, yes.
Yeah. But anyway, to wrap up the story, everything culminates in, so this like what appears to be a global apparel company with offices on the East and West Coast.
GAW.
They lose one contract and immediately Joanna Cassidy's like, we're all done. We're going to close down tomorrow.
She starts packing up shit.
She literally starts packing up her office because they didn't get one contract with like a school district. So Christina Applegate's like, well, we need to come up with an idea. Side note, Christina Applegate spent all of the petty cash money. So she's also sweating over that.
Well, like, her raggedy sibling stole it.
We need to get to that.
Yeah.
But Christina Applegate comes up with the bright idea of like, because the school district passed on the apparel company because they said, oh, students don't want to wear these stuffy ass uniforms. So Christina Applegate comes up with the idea of modernizing the uniforms. And so she wants to present her designs to the vendors. So she hosts a party at her house. So then the final act of the film is her and her siblings getting the house in order. Because like you said, it was like Grey Garden status before then.
What were those newspapers doing on all the stairs? I don't understand.
And they execute the fashion show like it goes without a hitch. Except that. The mom shows up.
Their dumbass mama.
Oh, I was so annoyed. The mom shows up and sees that there's this, because the mom in the beginning says to Christina Applegate, please don't have a party at the house. Mm-hmm. Like, don't do anything you know I'd be upset with. Do not have a party at the house. But her and her children, first of all, that raggedy ass house, they cleaned it up. It was immaculate.
It's immaculate.
Mm-hmm. They have built a full stage in the backyard, cleaned up the pool looked like it had been condemned. Mm-hmm. And they've cleaned it up and put like a runway over it.
Yeah.
All the kids are dressed in like cater waiter outfits.
There are adults wearing suits.
There are a range of adults sitting wearing business attire.
Not in the house, in the backyard.
Music's not playing loudly. Mm-hmm. And Christina Applegate is in the middle of giving a very polished presentation. And the mom shows up and goes.
The mom shows up and has the audacity. I know she's the mama, but like to be like, younger lady, you're in trouble. It's like, would you shut the fuck up and try to ascertain what's happening?
You left us for two months, with a lady you didn't even know. And then we get the mom calling a couple of times and the kids try to play it off like, oh, the babysitter's not here. 2 months went by and you never spoke to the person who was taking care of your kids and you weren't alarmed. And then you show up out of the blue and then you see this like major event happening. And your immediate thought is to like,
you have to scream out loud,
wag your finger.
If you had been a parent that was doing what they were supposed to be doing, your children would not have been in the rough shape they were in anyway.
That mom was garbage.
Garbage. Yeah.
But in the end, because even in the end, the receptionist shows up to the party and tells Joanna Cassidy, like, this girl you hired is 17.
Yeah, they found her. They photocopied her ID.
Because for some reason, Christina Applegate left her purse and wallet at work.
She was stressed out.
And at first, Joanna Cassidy's like, this is the most petty shit. Like, you conjuring up. Like, it almost sounds like she doesn't want to believe that that's her real ID because she's really rooting for Christina Applegate. But in the very end, Christina goes up to Joanna Cassidy and says, I'm sorry. I know I lied to you. I understand if you're mad at me. And Joanna Cassidy says, like, this shit is wild, but like the vendors loved it. Like they love your ideas. I have like a week full of meetings now. Like the company's saved. And then we find out that Joanna Cassidy has offered Christina Applegate like a job as her real self, even though she's 17 and didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. And Christina Applegate says no, she'd rather go to college. And that's the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. Except that we see that during the end credits, the grave diggers
got the money.
They found the money on the old lady, so they're kind of thanking her. And then they actually did bury her and put a tombstone. And the tombstone says old night, like nice old lady. I don't think it's a good movie. I do think there's a lot of charm on. I think the obvious direct. So this movie comes right after Home Alone. Mm-hmm. So to me, I could see an executive thinking like, let's capitalize on the popularity of Home Alone. We have this female lead who's in a very popular primetime sitcom. I guess I don't understand why they didn't take the angle. And what I would have assumed was these five kids get left with the babysitter from hell. And they spend the movie trying to disarm the babysitter because maybe that babysitter's actually has a more insidious plan to like rob the family or something. Mm-hmm. Even though that seems derivative to Home Alone, that like to me, that's kind of what I was expecting.
Well, or it doesn't have, it could be more slick, like use them for child labor.
Something
interesting.
Or I was thinking this could have been really fun as like a teen sort of like comedy drama about this young lady who sort of has to take over as mom, mm-hmm. because maybe their mom gets in trouble and she's in jail and the kids don't want to be sent off to foster care. So Christina Applegate pretends to be the mother. And so the bulk of the movie is her doing funny, calamitous things like having to go to PTA meetings and having to go to the doctor and dealing with the neighbors. And, but it's not really that. I mean, it's not until like the halfway point that we see Christina Applegate's character kind of be more responsible mm-hmm. of the children. And I think probably the best scene is when there's a point when the older brother realizes that he needs to step up mm-hmm. and she comes home late one night and he's like, I slaved in this kitchen making you dinner. They have an argument like they're a married couple.
Yeah. Like you didn't tell me you weren't coming home. Like it did.
You get to go to work and do interesting things.
Office stuff.
Yeah. I thought that was like the vibe I would have wanted. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's like the babysitter dies right away. Okay. The biggest issue with the film that you already mentioned, these badass kids. Oh, I couldn't stand.
Danielle Harris is one of them.
Yeah. Oh, I hated the youngest daughter.
That's her.
Mm-hmm. I hated the older brother, Keith Coogan. Mm-hmm. Who looked, his wig was so dry because they have him wearing a wig until the end when he cleans up. And then it's his actual hair, which is like short and clean cut. I thought he was annoying. He's supposed to be like this stoner loser kid. And did you notice all his jeans had interesting cuts in them?
Yeah.
Like big cuts in the knee. We get a lot of his thigh. And then towards the end, we see him like on the back of his jeans under his pockets, there are big cuts. So you can kind of see like his lower butt. Mm-hmm. It was just such an odd characterization.
The youngest brother, the one who injures himself, was in Leprechaun.
The youngest brother is the only one that kind of made sense to me.
I think he's the one that says, fuck you, Lucky Charms in Leprechaun. the scene where he falls off the roof and has to go to the hospital and Christina Applegate is posing as the mom. That doctor ain't shit. Cause she's railing on Coogan about why weren't you watching him? And he's clearly a minor or like supposed to be situated as a minor. The doctor's like, yeah, whatever.
The doctor's just smiling, cheesing it up. And then he's like, well, take care of yourself.
What do you mean your child was unattended and got a broken leg? I mean,
we're social services. Right,
this is questionable.
But yeah, I hated the kids. I just thought like, oh, this raggedy ass mom who leaves her badass kids in this dirty ass house. And it just, I kind of wish the kids, at the bare minimum, this would have been better if the kids were sweet kids mm-hmm. and they were maybe trying to cover for their mom mm-hmm. and maybe like, why weren't there scenes with neighbors coming to visit or family members?
The Coogan is with his buddies because Applegate tells him to do the dishes. So he's shooting the dishes from the roof. I'm like, none of the neighbors are calling the cops.
I mean, I know it's summertime, but it's just like, why? Like, where were the obvious things? They're, like neighbors coming to see like, hey, your kid's been alone for a long time. And then they have to try to pretend.
Can you imagine a neighborhood in LA with white people where somebody's shooting plates off the roof and the cops are not called?
Like, where's a scene like Ferris Bueller where maybe they have to have their mom's voice on audio cassette right. and play it off like she is here, but she's not feeling well. It just felt so lazy and stupid mm-hmm. and until we The best parts are with Christina Applegate at her job with Joanna Cassidy.
Yes, where you brought up Working Girl. It's like, what if Melanie Griffith had Joanna Cassidy as a boss?
Or what if, I mean, that could have been a third approach, is like, what? How about a movie where a young lady who maybe is a little lost, right? Like she's about to graduate high school, which is what Christina Applegate's character situation is. And she's kind of like, her mom's disappointed in her. She's kind of getting into light trouble. And then she gets roped into like this situation where she has to actually like step up. Mm-hmm. And then we see her evolve into like a responsible young lady. And with the help of this really cool, you know, executive businesswoman, Joanna Cassidy. I don't know. It just feels like there are so many missed opportunities to make better movies.
Yeah, I agree.
Within this one. I'm just going to go through my few little notes. I think it's so you used what's your word of the day?
Puerile.
Puerile, mm-hmm. Which means childish.
Mm-hmm. Trivial.
Trivial. That's how the movie feels, puerile.
Yeah.
Because even like, so the old lady dies and their first thought is we got to get rid of her. Okay, like not going to call the police. And then they write a note that says... nice old lady inside died of natural causes, and they put it on the suitcase and just drop it off.
Like, yeah.
Because then I felt like, is this trying to be... Because then I got like Weekend at Bernie vibes a little bit.
Sure.
Like that kind of 80s, but it just, there's no fun in what they're doing.
Yeah.
So we skipped over this, but the first job Christina Applegate gets is at a burger place, and that's where she meets, what's his name?
Josh Charles.
And she doesn't even last the night because she's been tasked with doing the dishes. Mm-hmm. And watching her try to scrub one of these containers felt like those infomercials where it's like someone trying to open a bag of chips and the chips fly everywhere. Yeah. Like, how does anyone ever open a bag of chips? Yeah. That's how Christina Applegate was washing that bin. And I was so annoyed. Like, and then on top of that, Christina Applegate has these acrylic nails that are so, I hated them. They're like, well, she smokes a lot, so I don't know if she really does smoke because her nails look kind of dingy. And then whomever did them, they were really big.
They looked
like talons.
They look like talons.
Oh, yeah. I hated them. So Christina Applegate, after she quits the burger place, she's taken a liking to the boy who worked there. Mm-hmm. And he happens to be the brother of the receptionist. Yes. At GAW.
Uh-huh.
GAW stands for General Apparel West. But at a point, Christina Applegate's driving around in that dead babysitter's car, and a group of drag queens steal the car. That felt so random.
It's so random. Christina's like, Liza?
Liza, because one of them, it's like Liza Minnelli, Marilyn Monroe, and someone else.
Yeah.
I thought that was so random.
I don't know the drag queens would do that.
So one of the tasks that
like they look like they were going to a show.
Yeah. I mean, they look like they were about to go on stage. Yeah. And they like hotwire this 1950s whatever and steal it. I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know. I don't think they would do that. I don't think they would do that. I feel like I'm Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs. Like, it's not in their nature.
So when Christina gets hired by Joanna Cassidy, Joanna's like giving her this rapid tour of the office, and Christina has this like amazing office adjacent to Joanna's, and Joanna's telling her like, this is what I need, and she's piling all this work on her, and she's like, but don't worry.
She's like, do one thing at a time.
Yeah. She's so encouraged.
She goes, don't be overwhelmed.
But the main thing that Christina's character is supposed to do is print out the QED report.
It's on the C drive.
But and I just thought it was so funny that it's like, and the report is huge. It's
it's bound and huge. And what's that those old printouts with the perforations on the side?
Yeah, those IBM printer type things.
I remember that was what we learned computing on when I was in elementary school. And I hated that paper. I hated it.
Yeah. But that's when so Christina has to send a fax and she doesn't know how to do that. And the receptionist is like, well, you're so qualified. You got this job and you have this education. You don't know how to send a fax. So she goes into the fax room, and there's another lady there who's really sweet.
Oh, that's Kimmy Robertson from Twin Peaks.
And she's like, oh, congratulations. I applied for that job, but I guess I wasn't qualified enough. And Christina's sort of watching her, like, how do you send a fax? Mm-hmm. And then this lady just like unprovoked walks into Christina Applegate's office and goes, oh, well, things are really slow and I'm really good with computers. So if you need anything. And of course, Christina's like, well, actually, do you know how to access the QED report? And the lady goes, yeah. So she does it for her.
Well, I'm so confused because the QED report is bound in this big bulky blue thing. Kathy is Kimmy's name, takes it and then just returns with the same thing.
So yeah.
Is it just a refresh report in the binder? Or
what is it? And then at a point, that lady gets sick, mm-hmm. but Christina still needs the report, like a new one. So she comes in from home sick to bring the report.
Did you print this and bind this at home? Like,
Do you have this printer at home? I don't know. It's so stupid.
Yes.
Okay. There is a male executive at GAW who's, you already mentioned, dating Joanna, but is also a philanderer and hitting on Christina Applegate. But I thought his name is Gus.
Yeah.
I thought he was sufficiently creepy.
Yeah.
Like he's
smarmy.
Yeah. It actually worked quite well. We need to talk about the cigarette smoking.
There's a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Cause there's a lot of it. Christina stays smoking.
She does.
Like every scene she has a cigarette.
It's not Meryl Streep and Silkwood quite, but
no, not quite, but it's just like, she's 17. Like she's just, always everywhere, just mm-hmm. everywhere smoking. And even Joanna Cassidy is smoking. Mm-hmm. So the boy Josh, he, you know, we have to remember that it's 2 months, but she's developed this full life and like this relationship with Josh, but she doesn't want to tell him where she works because she has found out that the receptionist is his sister. Mm-hmm. So he gets mad and then she goes, why are you acting like Henry VIII? I thought that was funny.
There's another line she has about when she's working the burger joint in the Overly Happy Boss. She's like, did he just read Dianetics?
Yeah. Well, there's another line where, because Gus, the creep, goes out with Joanna Cassidy, I think to like Santa Barbara for like a nice weekend. Mm-hmm. And so Joanna comes back all like she has a pep in her step and she's telling Christina Applegate, have you ever had a 48-hour orgasm?
Ew, with Gus?
And then Joanna's like, am I glowing? And Christina says, yeah, you're shiny. I don't normally think anything about David Duchovny, but he's in this movie playing another employee who's kind of in cahoots with the receptionist
yes.
to take down Christina Applegate. And I thought he looked really fresh. Like he was cute.
He did. I used to date somebody that really liked him and made me watch. And I still own that copy that he bought for me of The Rapture, which is a movie about cults with Mimi Rogers that David Duchovny started. I think right after this, but you see David's butt. And I've seen that movie and I don't quite remember the butt, but yeah. He was young and fresh.
It's called The Rapture.
Yeah, Mimi Rogers is the lead.
Oh,
it's fun. I remember liking
it. He looks really good in this.
He has long hair,
and he's very muscular.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow.
Well, we own it. If you ever want to make that a secret film,
Is it a thriller?
Yeah, it's a movie about cults.
Oh, well, we were talking about cults yesterday.
We certainly
were. I've been thinking about joining one. But anyway, I was so distracted by the fact that Christina Applegate's character has this like big job. And I just kept thinking, how did she complete her W-4?
Well, yeah. How is she getting paid? Yes.
Because we see her collect a paycheck mm-hmm. and we like, how did HR, like, how did they complete her W-4? How did they take ID? Like what?
Well, yeah, that.
I know it's a puerile film, but I don't know. That really bothered me. Okay. The other thing that bothered me about these raggedy ass siblings is we find out Christina Applegate has access to petty cash mm-hmm. but Christina has no money to feed her siblings, her children, as she keeps saying. Mm-hmm. So she's
taking it out with saying she's going to pay it back out of her check.
And she takes all of it. She doesn't take little bits. She takes like a bunch of the petty cash and keeps it in her purse. Mm-hmm. And what do her siblings do? Steal that money.
They steal. She brings the petty cash box home and they steal money out of it.
And they buy like an entertainment center. The drug addict kid buys like a ring for his girlfriend.
See, that's why I think that character was supposed to have a much more prominent.
Yeah. Well, and then Christina asked him, like, you bought her a diamond ring? And the boy goes, it was a chip. I thought that was funny.
It's like diamonds are forever.
Well, we find out they spent $3,000 out of the petty cash.
And she's like, we're out of groceries again, to her oldest brother. And he's like, yeah, I had some friends over and I need to entertain them. Like, oh,
I was
no.
so.
Oh no.
Mad. Mm-hmm. I was so mad.
I mean, I guess good for her that she decided to take care of these kids. But if I would have been her, I would have used my money to go rent myself a room somewhere and just live my little life.
I would have called social services.
Yeah, I'd be like, take these
raggedy kids
away.
My mama left us. Take these kids away. I'm old enough to take care of myself. Yep. Oh, I would have been so mad.
Oh yeah, no.
Because their reaction is just like.
Like, you're not helping me at all. It's a pigsty here. Ugh. You stole money from me. And you're loud and rude. No.
At the end, I didn't mention at the fashion show, not only does the mom show up and ruin it, but before that, the little boyfriend who worked at the burger shop, he drives like the burger truck, which apparently is like an ice cream truck as well.
Yeah.
And he shows up to the fashion show playing music, and then over the microphone is trying to appeal to Christina Aguilera, saying like, Sue Ellen, I still
Christina
love
Aguilera.
You. Girl, Christina. Christina Applegate. Uh-huh. He's on the mic like, Sue Ellen, I love you or whatever. But they reconcile in the end. And mm-hmm. she's like, well, like, because he's saying he can't trust her. And she's like, well, I was only lying about one thing and now it's all out in the open.
He asks, is there something else I don't know? Are you really a guy?
And he says, you're not really a guy, are you?
Wow. Really? Okay. That's where the fears are going.
You'd
okay.
be so lucky. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then... I did think it was funny at the end when everything's all good, the mom sort of pops out because Christina tells her, go wait upstairs. Like, go to your room.
We'll talk about like this, like adults tomorrow. Yeah. You're tired.
But then the mom, of course, can't stay in her room. So she comes back out. She's like, oh, by the way, where's the babysitter? And then the film ends.
Yeah.
And then we go to the credits and we see the Gravediggers. But I thought that was funny. Like, bitch, where's the babysitter?
Yeah, you are.
You weren't worried about that for 2 months in Australia.
With your boyfriend who doesn't want to pay to take your kids with.
With okay. your boyfriend who didn't. Yeah. You're dating a man who knows you have 5 children and sweep whisks you off to Australia for 2 months and doesn't think about.
This woman who has 5 children. This ragged
37-year-old. This 37-year-old. Her hair was so dry.
She was. It's just like so clear that she was not 37.
Kenny's wig was dry, but the mom's hair, because she's like very blonde and her front sections were so brittle and tattered. That mom was raggedy.
I would have more easily believed Joanna Cassidy was 37 here than the mother.
Well, they look the same age.
Well, right, but yeah. But Joanna Cassidy's put together, even yeah. with that bad red wig. But
her fashions, when she shows up at the end to the fashion show, she looks very like late 80s.
Oh, the show. Well, because I mean, it filmed in 1990s. The shoulder pads Christina mm-hmm. Applegate is wearing.
Like, oh my god. Oh, well, that's all I have to say about Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. Again, we decided to watch this because BET Plus is releasing a remake that features like Nicole Richie, mm-hmm. Ms. Pat. Apparently Tyra Banks was supposed to be in it, I think, and produce it, but that fell through.
That's probably okay.
Like, I think maybe she was supposed to be the Nicole Richie character. Either way, I don't know why I agreed to watch the remake. And I certainly didn't know it was a BET Plus film. But now that I know that God. It is, and after watching this, I'm kind of anxious to watch it because I know it's going to be a hot mess express.
Yeah, but you like Ms. Pat.
I do like Ms. Pat.
And the old lady, though, is June Squibb.
Oh, June Squibb, who I really liked in that one movie.
Thelma. But, you know, we know that'll be a small role.
But, oh, she's probably the babysitter.
Yeah, she's the babysitter. Definitely, she's the babysitter. Mm-hmm.
So, Nicole, I wonder if Nicole Richie is going to be the boss.
She might be. She clearly can't be the Applegate character.
Well, Nicole Richie's like my age. I
right.
think. Yeah.
So she will be an adult.
So, yeah. Then who would Miss Pat be?
Maybe Miss Pat's the boss.
Huh. Well, I think after watching this and knowing the
maybe
story.
Maybe Nicole Richie's the mom.
Oh, maybe. Well, no. Well, yeah, mate. Well, because I feel like Miss Pat would be the mom then. Like the old raggedy ass mama who just leaves her kids. Because the Miss Pat show, that's something Miss Pat would do is leave her kids.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, what would you give the 1991 film Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
I guess 2.
I would give it 2 out of 5. I don't think it reaches its potential. And I did find the first half pretty grating.
I was feeling more cranky about it last night, but like 1.5 cranky. But
I can see why people like it. And I did think there were parts that were cute in the second half.
Yeah, I like Christina Applegate. I think those are the best parts, like watching this teenager kind of successfully navigate this world.
If Javier's mad we don't like it, he can buy us drinks and we'll talk about it. No, I'll make him feel better about it.
There you go.
What do you have going on this week?
Civil War.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. What else is this week? There's a couple. I think you get to see Hitman this week, which I'm excited for you to see.
That you were gushing over. I love
Glenn Powell and that. Yeah.
Is he shirtless in that movie?
Oh, I don't recall. It's not.
It's not that kind of movie.
That's not the charming I care about. It's just kind of a very funny, sweet, entertaining movie.
We're also seeing Arcadian
with Nicolas Cage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sasquatch Sunset comes out next week, but I think we missed all the press screenings. But I actually was very tickled at that film.
And then we have a bunch of Patreon movies to watch.
And some screeners, because Sting, there's a new John Travolta movie. Something with Vincent Cassell that seems kind of interesting called Damaged.
I don't know how we're going to get through it.
With Sammy Jackson. Mm-hmm.
Well.
Oh, that movie with... Johnny Knoxville, where he's a coach again, called Sweet Dreams.
Well, I don't think we're going to get through all that, but.
Oh, okay. Well.
Anything else you'd like to say?
No.
Ta-ta.